Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 479. In this episode, Scott talks with John O'Bacon about building community around the XPRIZE.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today we're talking with John O'Bacon, who used to work as a community manager for Ubuntu, and you've got a new gig now.
I do indeed. Yep, I've moved over to a place called the XPRIZE Foundation.
The XPRIZE.
Which is based out of
now,
LA.
When I think XPRIZE, I think there's a prize for helping people either, you know, get to space or fly a solar-powered something around the world. I mean, it's really hard technical problems, and I feel like no one ever got around to solving them, so let's put a prize for $10 million and see if anyone will do it.
Right. It's interesting, you know, when I left Canonical, and I was in a position, this is probably going to sound a little egotistical, it's not meant to, but I was in a relatively public position at Canonical in representing the community. When I went to XPRIZE, a bunch of people said, you know, what's that? And I talk about the very first XPRIZE, which was the Ansari XPRIZE, which was the space one, and everybody remembers it. It's that big space competition from years ago. And it started out that way as, you know, Peter Diamandis, the founder of XPRIZE, basically organized that as the first XPRIZE competition. It was never really intended to go beyond that, but it was so successful that he thought, maybe we can do this in other areas as well. So.
And how does someone, I mean, was he like a bajillionaire and he just sat around like, you know, no one's doing this thing. No one's getting us to the moon again. Let's put a prize for $10 million to make that happen. Like, how does that conversation start?
I mean, he was basically, I wasn't there,
yeah,
so I'm basing this on stories
Tony Stark
past.
And right. Then this guy kind of hanging exactly. out trying to solve problems.
Well, he was a space dork, and he's incredibly accomplished academically, studied at MIT, and he'd read a book about the Spirit of St. Louis and thought that, I mean, that was an incentive competition that resulted in commercial flight, and he thought we could do the same thing for space. And the thing about Peter is that he is one of the most affable human beings I think I've ever met. Like, he's got a great way of connecting with people. And he basically pulled together a stage in the Mojave Desert and announced this competition and had the ability to reach out to media and all the rest of it to get the level of awareness that it struck. And he's basically continued that forward. I mean, you know, he's essentially an entrepreneur. He's you know, the founder of XPRIZE, but he also founded a bunch of other companies like Human Longevity and Planetary Resources, which is mining asteroids. So he's kind of crazy in all the right ways, I think is the best way of describing it.
Where does the pot come from? Where does the money come from when a prize is put together?
There's two components, really. I mean, you've got the prize purse, which everyone hears about. So, you know, the $15 million Global Learning X Prize. But then there's the money that goes into the development of the prize itself. One of the things that I didn't realize until I joined X Prize was just how much work goes into one of these X Prizes. Because they are, you know, Google talks a lot about moonshots, and they are, by definition, moonshot competitions. They're designed to solve market failures, where the market is not providing a solution for a major issue in the world. And so the money for you know, for the prize itself, for the development of the prize, comes from lots of different sources. It's foundations and wealthy benefactors and people like that, and then the actual prize purse is usually from either individuals or companies. So, for example, Elon Musk put up a big chunk of money for the Global Learning X Prize competition, as well as a bunch of other sponsors as well.
So it's almost a branding exercise in the sense of there were ways to get money and to motivate people with grants and things like that, and also just general academic accomplishment. But if you get organized and put a lot of thought and branding and excitement behind it, it somehow people get off their butts.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting model because, you know, I came from the open source world. I've spent my career working in open source, which is inherently collaborative. So going to a world that is more competitive was interesting. And one of the things that's interesting about the incentive model is that you have to have a prize purse that's sufficiently large enough that it justifies R&D in that area. So, for example, with the Global Learning X Prize, there's 250 million kids in the world who can't read. And that has a tremendous economic impact on those countries. It has a huge impact on those kids and families. And it's a market failure. The company has not solved that problem. But that's a really ambitious piece of software to build. It could incorporate machine learning and artificial intelligence and all different pieces. So you have to have a prize purse that's big enough that can result in that level of R&D to initiate. So it's not just that people are wooed by the prize purse. It's that it essentially justifies the formation of R&D in new markets, which I never really particularly realized until I joined XPRIZE. And in many cases, people actually invest more money than the prize purse in winning the competition. With the first XPRIZE, I think, if I remember correctly, I think like $50 million was invested by one of the teams in a $10 million competition.
Wow.
So it's an interesting model.
Now, the Global Learning one that was launched in September of 2014, that's the $15 million prize create, you know, free apps to do reading, writing, and arithmetic. The result of that, though, was for open source teams. Like, it's not always for a company. The resulting software could be open source.
Yeah. So this was the first open source XPRIZE, which was, fortuitous for me coming into XPRIZE just before that prize launched. And the idea there is that teams can build their technology privately if they want, but then the prize, the winning five team or the top five finalists have to open source their technology. And one of the things I liked about that was that it means that it's not just that you're creating a solution for this issue of illiteracy around the world, but that because it's open source at the end of it, that builds technology that essentially becomes a foundational code base in society. It can be forked. People can utilize it in different ways. And it also opens up interesting ideas around whether teams can collaborate over common pieces, which is one of the things that I've been experimenting in, which, you know, I'm not aware of people doing beforehand. So it's been very experimental at a technology layer for the XPRIZE.
When somebody jumps into it, are they already in the space? Like, I'm looking at the Global Learning one and I'm thinking, oh, well, the Khan Academy should get involved in that. And that would be a great way for them to, you know, they're already doing open source, right. They're already doing education, they're already got great design. Like, that's a slam dunk for them.
It's a real mix. I mean, there are teams, I think it's something like 198 teams, something like that, registered for the Global Learning X Prize. And it's a mixture of academics, companies, individuals. It's a really broad mix of people who are taking part. And that's one of the things I quite like about it, is that there's, I think it was the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize, which is to build a device that can diagnose a range of issues better than a board of certified physicians. One of the participants in that, I believe, was Jack Andraker, who was this kid who developed a test for pancreatic cancer when he was like 15. Mm. And it's one of those things where I think it unlocks smart people in doing interesting things. And it's again, the similar principle to open source is that anybody's got the opportunity to rise to success.
Do these prizes just hang out there until they are solved? Are they like those difficult math problems that we hear about a century later and they say, yeah, someone was working in their basement and solved this, cracked it. Like, is the Tricorder X Prize, did that get solved?
There's a timeline. These prizes are usually 3 to 5 years. They're quite long because they're pretty ambitious. I mean, an X Prize has to be an ambitious prize. It can't be something that could be won in a couple of months. But there is a defined timeline and there is a defined criteria around winning the prize. So if you don't achieve it, you don't win the prize. It's usually broken into different phases. So there's a development phase, there's a field testing phase. There's a phase where you narrow down to a set of finalists. It varies obviously between the different prizes, but yeah, there's a timeline for every prize.
Okay, right. Because the Qualcomm Tricorder one, and Tricorder, of course, was the medical device that they used on Star Trek. So that's just kind of a generic word now. It was a $10 million prize, and it's broken up into kind of grand prize, second prize, third prize.
Right.
And then there's a timeline, of course, that people can continue on to the next step, right?
Exactly. And I believe that we've got the finalists for the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize. Mm-hmm. We're getting into the final stages of that competition right now, and it's really interesting seeing what they're coming up with.
What is the relationship between the prize and then the company whose name goes in front? Like, there's the Nokia sensing challenge, which is a sensor problem. There's the Google Lunar one. Is that just the primary backer of that prize?
Yeah, so that's the primary sponsor of the prize purse, and then like I said earlier on, within each prize you'll have a series of other sponsors that invariably do the prize development work, but also that the relationship will vary in different ways with the different sponsors. So sponsors may be able to give you access to technology or access to smart people or testing infrastructure and things like that. So at its most basic level, it's they provide the money. But then there's sometimes additional benefits on top of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of them that was the second prize, the Archon Genomics Prize, ended up getting canceled. Was that just because technology went so fast that it became a solved problem before the prize ended?
Yeah, precisely that. Is that essentially the technology just caught up quicker than the prize, which I think, again, I wasn't there at that point in the X Prize history, but from talking to my colleagues, that was a necessary thing to happen, is that you want an X Prize to be so ambitious that can't happen, that technology cannot catch up quicker, but also you don't want it to be too ambitious where it can't be done. So for example, the Google Lunar X Prize, which is to build a rover that will run on the moon and send back HD video back to Earth. That's a remarkably ambitious X Prize, mm-hmm. And that's been extended a few times because it's so ambitious. So I think that's riding pretty close to what can and can't be mm-hmm. done. So X Prize has to get a pretty delicate balance in making sure that it's, it's crazy, but not too crazy.
The thing is, though, it's funny. Maybe this is just a linguistics thing, but the idea that you can say something in a sentence and go, "Yeah, well, I can see that happening," but it's the lunar one, for example, right? Just I'm reading here. The prize awards $20 million to the first team to land a rover on the moon, and then successfully move it 500 meters and transmit back high definition, right? So I'm thinking, okay, high definition, cool. Yeah, move it 500 meters. Yeah, got that. It's just the little detail of getting it to the moon.
Right.
But other than that small detail, I'm like, this is off the shelf parts, right? My kid could do this in a weekend.
Easy. Yeah. It's what's been interesting about the Google Lunar one is that there's at least in the United States, there is fairly significant regulation around building space technology. And I believe it's called ITAR. Hmm. Which basically says that if you build a spacecraft that's bigger than a certain size, it's considered a weapon.
Really? Oh, I guess because it could go really fast and crash into stuff.
Right. So it's one of those things whereby I'm presuming that it limits what teams can and can't do fairly significantly. And obviously, you then need to deal with launch partners and all kinds of stuff. So it's not like that competition exists in a vacuum. Is that, the SpaceX and other organizations are building technology to launch to the moon cheaper and more efficiently. So while this prize is in development, other pieces that are variables are working alongside it as well.
Right. And that the lunar one, easy to say, but hard to do. That was delayed from the end of this year to the end of next year.
Right. Exactly.
And pretty soon, someone needs to say that they're going to schedule a launch. Otherwise, you're going to have to move it again.
Yeah, I believe that we're in the final stages of getting to that mm-hmm. now, into to the launch. So, Yeah, it's been a tough one to run, but I think it's starting to reap some rewards.
It seems like something that Elon Musk would be doing to get a little robot on the moon. It doesn't have to be giant. Like, why not? Why couldn't it be, you know, the size of a laptop?
Right. And I believe that the rovers are pretty small. Yeah. And it's you know, they've been testing in moon-like conditions on Earth as well. I mean, I believe there's been some testing out in Hawaii and places like that. So, you know, it's obviously not space is not something you can iterate on very quickly. You know, in software you can use automated tests and you can iterate really fast to improve things, but you get basically one shot at it with space. So.
I want to take a brief moment to thank my sponsor, SyncFusion, this week. The first and only complete Hadoop distribution designed for Windows is now available from SyncFusion. You can literally deploy a production-ready big data cluster in minutes. This revolutionary big data platform will not only change the way that you approach big data, but it is 100% free for everyone, with free commercial support for SyncFusion Plus members. Learn more at syncfusion.com/bigdata. These things being rebooted remotely, like Bill Nye, his team has got a sensor system out there that just got rebooted remotely. And I'm just thinking about how unreliable my PC is. The fact that they were able to take a light sail and reboot the thing.
Yeah,
it's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was reading about, I think it was a trip to Mars. I think it was the technology that they sent up there was, of course, developed years ago. So you've got material constraints, you've got processing constraints, and then, of course, you've just got that massive distance in terms of radio transmission. So this is one of the reasons why I could never be a space person, because it's too complicated.
Yeah. Have you read The Martian?
No.
I'm recommending this to everyone. I recommend it to everyone who's listening, and I recommend it to you. It is what they call a hard science fiction, where it's a science fiction book about a fellow who's on Mars with his team, and something happens and he gets left behind. So then he has to figure out how to survive for 18 months. And it's written by a huge nerd who wants to make sure all the science works. So it's hard science fiction, indicating that it's not just made up, like totally wacky lasers and force fields. Everything that he tries has to be something that is scientifically feasible. And
interesting.
It's going to be a movie with Matt Damon.
Really?
Seriously, it'll change your life. This book is amazing. The audiobook is brilliant, but I will. I've even told people that if they buy it and they hate it, that I'll pay for it. That's how good it is.
That is a pretty strong advocacy of this
book.
Well,
you know how, I don't know if you've ever seen like a show or a movie that's so good that you just want to find a friend and then watch them watch the movie so that you can have the experience of watching them watch the movie. I would like to sit over your shoulder and watch you read The Martian so I could see your face at different points and go, I know.
That's both endearing and creepy at the same time.
It's extremely creepy. So, shifting gears, the first time that I think I ended up talking to you was around 2009 when your book, The Art of Community, came out. And this is kind of the canonical book on creating communities, both offline and online, and, you know, leadership in that context. So, and then you did that, you know, working with the Ubuntu project and building community there. How does that relate to working on XPRIZE? Is there a community now? I think of XPRIZE as being a bunch of rich people and scientists. How does that affect me?
It's a great question. I was at Canonical for 8 years, and I'd written the book, and I'd been basically born in the brine of open source community, and I felt like no one's ever an expert, I felt like I knew it pretty well. And I wanted to do something completely different to get me out of my comfort zone. But I wanted it to have a more meaningful impact. I didn't want to just go to a company that makes more widgets. Mm. And I got introduced to Peter Diamandis, the founder of XPRIZE. And I basically said to him, you know, I think XPRIZE is neat, but only so many people are going to be able to take part in these competitions. You know, they're 3 or 5 years. They require significant R&D and investment and whatever else. Not everybody can quit their job to work in an XPRIZE. And I said, in my mind, what you need is a global community that has the shared mission and ethos of making the world a better place and applying their skills and their perspectives to solving smaller problems all over the place. And he basically said, that sounds like a great idea. Come and build it. So I joined XPRIZE, frankly, really not knowing what kind of community it was going to look like. And the last year has been a really interesting learning experience in identifying what elements of the community collaborative model work and apply in different areas. So my goal at XPRIZE has been to build a community of people who are A, passionate about the work that XPRIZE does. That's what I would call a read community. It's people who won't collaborate or build anything, but they're fans and they want to engage in discussion. But then I also wanted to build a collaborative community that's working together on practical problems outside of XPRIZE's that can make the world a better place, that can solve our grand challenges. And kind of conducting that work, I've learned more about community management in the last year than I've done in my entire career.
Seriously?
That's a bold statement. It's been fascinating, because one of the things I've learned is that innovation and... So innovation comes in different forms. And in the open source world and in the technology world, innovation starts with a hack. It starts with someone building something. Like you make something, you shove it up in GitHub. Somebody also finds it interesting. And so long as you've got the tools and the knowledge to contribute, then that hack can evolve and it can be buffed into something that's more refined. And then you have a release and then it becomes a project. And that happens in companies. It happens in open source communities and elsewhere, is that it starts and ends with material. That's what you collaborate around. What's interesting about XPRIZE is that innovation is a statement. It's, you know, we want people to solve this problem. It's a moonshot thing. So it's innovation in a way, but it's problem solving in another way. And a lot of the people who join the XPRIZE community are not the kind of people that are in the open source community, that are in the technology world. They are entrepreneurs or they're scientists. So connecting those people to a community when they're not necessarily starting out with a hack has been the challenge. Is, you know, how do I bring a neuroscientist into the XPRIZE community to play an impact in what we're doing, or play a role in what we're doing, in a way that we do the same kind of thing with a software engineer? With a software engineer, the material is code. What's the equivalent code for a neuroscientist? And there's been all kinds of like interesting learnings. It's been exacerbating at times because I've realized that long held perspectives that I've had have been frankly untrue. And then it's also opened up all kinds of new ideas and thinking about what a community should look like. So there's going to be a book at some point.
I was just going to ask, it sounds like you have another book in you.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the key lessons that I've learned is that I used to be broadly of the viewpoint that so long as you can get people united around the mission, any community can be built anywhere. So if you can get people excited about a book club or about a band or about, you know, making the software or whatever it might be, that a community is possible anywhere. And I think that read communities are possible anywhere. Communities where people are sharing an experience and sharing a perspective and sharing consumption is possible anywhere. But collaborative write communities, I don't think are as tractable in as many places. Is that you have to look at, you know, what that core material is, what that hack is, what the tools are, what the knowledge is, and the kind of personality that people have got. You know, I've written an article about open organizations that's going to be going up on a website soon, and I interviewed Jim Whitehurst, who's the CEO of Red Hat, and he recently wrote a book about open organizations. He came from Delta Airlines to Red Hat, and one of the points that he made was he really only understood the open source approach and the collaborative approach effectively because he came out of that world into that world. And I feel like going from that open source world into a completely different world has helped me to understand that as well, and how unique the technology mindset is. Like, I think we take for granted when you and I have both been working in technology for a long time. I think we take for granted the personality traits that are present in technology people and how pragmatic and how practical they are that aren't necessarily present elsewhere.
Now, not trying to be too functional, but when I think of community, I have trouble separating it from the concept of collaboration, and that inevitably leads me towards tools. And when I think about collaborating in open source, I always feel like an advancement in tooling comes up and then collaboration increases. So the advent of Git, IRC for a while was like where it all happened. Git comes along, then GitHub, GitHub issues, while some communities are in the GitHub issues kind of Slack level of collaboration, other very successful communities, it seems like the only thing that they do is send email, and they have a mailing list, and it's extremely low fidelity with ridiculous quoting rules, and it's like a whole other language. Where does the XPRIZE community collaborate? Where does this collaboration and community occur?
Well, this was one of the first interesting questions was, when I joined the XPRIZE Foundation, the first thing I did was just to learn about who's involved right now. And, when I was at Canonical, the general demographic of people was technology people. It's people who are interested in Ubuntu. And even people outside of like software developers, biz dev people, for example, were technology biz dev people. In the XPRIZE community, when I joined in the XPRIZE community at the time, it was a real interesting mix of business people, conference organizers, entrepreneurs, scientists, VCs, a massive mix of people. And I wanted to identify, okay, I don't want to build like a ton of small communities. I want to bring these people together in a way that's unified for all of them as best I can. So the first thing I put in place was the forum at forum.xprize.org, because that's a relatively straightforward way in which people can engage. And my feeling was, let's start simple and see what shakes out. So the first step was, I looked at the XPRIZE community as essentially a barren island with kind of natives on it. And what I need to put in place are the tools, the roads and the buildings and the infrastructure. So a lot of that was building a website, getting the forum in place, getting a wiki in place, having monthly hangouts where we can communicate out things that are going on, infusing community into the prize design, the prize development process. Like, nothing existed in that sense before I joined. And then what happened was natural kind of next steps panned out of that. So we've seen, for example, teams forming, open teams that are forming to compete in these prizes where they're keeping all their material on GitHub. We've organized local user groups all over the world called XPRIZE think tanks, where we have teams in groups in Shanghai and Hyderabad and Bangalore and London and Zurich and various other places. So my view was, frankly, suck it and see. It's like join and see what we already had, and then it would naturally, the most logical areas of focus would pan out of that. Mm-hmm. And also, the other challenge here was bringing community to a organization that is pretty unfamiliar with how communities work. So Peter Diamandis understands community at the wider level. My colleagues at the XPRIZE Foundation, this was completely new to them. I come from a company where it was born in the brine of community. It understood the importance of community and why that plays a role in open source. Whereas for the XPRIZE Foundation, the first questions I had was, why are you here? And what's the point of this? Mm-hmm. And, so it was interesting kind of translating the point of all of this stuff into a language for people who are completely unfamiliar with it. And then building kind of engagement and building support for that internally. This is one of the reasons why the last year I think has been a really interesting year, because I was consulting with companies previously who weren't particularly familiar with the community, but you play a different role as a consultant than you do when you come in on the ground. So
what can the software engineer or developer or person who's listening to this podcast do when they can't presumably take 3 years of their life off and assemble a team and go off into an unknown space? If they want to do this kind of work, do they find people who are working on XPRIZE and join those companies? Are there smaller XPRIZEs that an individual or a person can do in their garage? Mm.
Well, one of the things that we're exploring right now, so I've broken these initial ideas into a few different phases. So, phase one was getting all the infrastructure up in place, which we're pretty much there now. Phase two was getting these local think tank groups all over the world set up, which is where people give presentations about 3D printing, about drones, about artificial intelligence, that kind of stuff. But then also those groups are encouraged to kind of get together and to ideate and to brainstorm ways in which they can collaborate and work together. So one thing I'd recommend is software people go to a think tank, or if there isn't a think tank near you, set one up. Mm-hmm. But the second area is, the third area rather, that we're at the beginning of thinking about, and I'd love to get people's views on this, is I'm of the view that, you know, XPRIZE is a big, hairy, audacious incentive competitions. And imagine that you've got all of these big problems in the world floating above us around energy, around water, around ocean health, around education. XPRIZE understands those problems pretty well and can pick off some elements of those problems. And then at the bottom, underneath that mass of problems, are people who can do stuff. They're software developers, hardware engineers, translators, designers, scientists, all of those different people. So XPRIZE basically translates some of those problems into a form that some of those people can connect with. And those are XPRIZE competitions. My personal philosophy is that there are still loads of major challenges in the world that people would not be able to participate in that are smaller pieces that I believe that people would like to play a role in. So this could be making better software for emergency responders to communicate with each other on cell phones. It could be building crisis management systems where people can quickly find relatives and food and things like that. It could be big data. I just recently joined a board for the Open Cloud Consortium, which is creating an open data commons for doing cancer research and Alzheimer's research. You know, this is the kind of thing that I think technology people would love to play a role in making the world a better place that isn't an XPRIZE. Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking at doing right now is exploring ways in which we can construct an environment where people can do precisely that. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to get people's input on the forum, particularly, you know, what would be attractive to somebody? Because again, it's everything in my mind starts with a hack with that world. So how do we, what's the first hack in solving these bigger problems? And then how do we make that hack apply to those bigger problems, right, in a practical sense?
Like, ideally, and this is selfish, but because I'm a diabetic and I work on some open source projects around diabetes, one of the if there were a diabetes XPRIZE, it would be closing the loop and making a software-based controlled artificial pancreas.
Right.
Which is kind of currently being done, and there's three or four people who've hacked one together in their garage. But like formalizing that in a way that dealt with all of the issues around patient privacy and security and all those kinds of things. It would be interesting to have XPRIZEs that were somehow coordinated or managed or supported by the XPRIZE community, but maybe didn't just have a giant purse on the other side.
Well, yeah, it's interesting
like
you say that.
Like a Kickstarter with no money on the other end.
Yeah, there's a spin-off of XPRIZE has been this site called HeroX, which is essentially Kickstarter for running incentive competitions. So, you know, you could have a competition that's $500, or it could be $500,000. So it could conceivably be something else. But the idea, one of the things that we're working with right now with the think tanks is encouraging local groups to kind of go through an ideation process that results in a HeroX competition. And then you could potentially do some fundraising to fund that at a smaller level. So right now with Kickstarter, people get up and they say, we want to raise, you know, $50,000 to make our product happen. You could conceivably have a really crisp competition that solves a particular problem and then go and get people to fund that. They can contribute towards the prize purse. So this is another interesting kind of slant on the model. And that, frankly, is important for scaling up the incentive competition model, because XPRIZEs are so big, there's only so many you can run at a time. So I think you need that scalable crowdsource model for it to really have that wider impact.
It'd be interesting to see if you could run a bunch. Could you run one? What is the difference between running $1 million XPRIZE and, you know, I don't know, 10, $100,000 ones?
Well, that's it. You know, there's one of the things I've been reading into recently. I don't know if you've read into this, is behavioral economics. And, you know, there's a guy called Rory Sutherland, who's this, he actually works in advertising. And he's a tremendous TED speaker. I'd encourage your listeners to go and check him out, Rory Sutherland. And he basically taught, you know, behavioral economics is essentially the premise that people make irrational decisions. And that, you know, economics is you have a very rational set of ways in which the economy works. And then economics is, you know, is panned out of those rational presumptions. And we all know that those rational presumptions are completely fictitious. So it's basically this applied to social behavior. And one of the premises that Rory Sutherland talks about is a guy wrote this book called Nudge, is that the way in which we make big things happen is not necessarily through one massive thing. It's through lots of small nudges. So, you know, we see this in governments where a government will try to solve a problem, and what they'll do is they'll announce the $2 billion initiative to solve this particular problem. Whereas in reality, when you empower lots of people to do lots of little paper cut nudges, that's how we tick off these problems. And this is how crowdfunding, crowdsourcing and community development has had an impact on the world. Is, you know, Wikipedia is one of the finest example of the nudge model, is that lots of people have written little bits of Wikipedia, and now it's become a tremendously valuable aggregate. So I believe that there is a similar kind of approach that can be applied to solving our major challenges in the world through XPRIZE. So XPRIZE competitions are the big campaigns, but then we need to empower lots of people to make those small nudges.
Very cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on.
So folks can go up and look certainly at the new forums at forums.xprize.org. Is community.xprize.org coming soon?
It is. It's coming at the end of this month. That's going to be launching. But you can find everything right now at forum.xprize.org. And then obviously you can just go to the main website, xprize.org, to find out about the wider organization. So.
And certainly also, I do very much recommend The Art of Community, your book. It's certainly still relevant today.
I hope so. But I'm looking forward to writing the next one.
And we are too. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.